Welcome to Sunday Morning, a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. I'm your host, Mimi Lawson. Susan Shearer is the director of RNCG, which is the Angel Foundation. She's going to tell us all about that. We were introduced by a mutual friend last week. We had lunch. I thought this was a great idea. First of all, tell everybody what RNCG means.
RNCG stands for the RN Cancer Guides. And it's a company that helps cancer patients and their families navigate all the aspects of their care using oncology nurses to get them through the financial, medical, and emotional barriers.
I think this is a great idea. You are a nurse, correct?
Yes.
And you've been with a cancer center here around the Bay Area, with a local cancer center for quite some time. And that's how you got into this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when you were working for this company, what were you finding? What was the whole reason of bringing up the Angel Foundation?
Well, actually, the Angel Foundation came out of a need because the company RN Cancer Guides has different financial vehicles to pay for the services. Nurses cannot bill. Mm-hmm. So there was a workaround. And we kept getting patients that didn't have those vehicles referred to us. And these are uninsured patients. These are patients that are falling through the cracks, that are really needing some help. And we could never turn them away.
Right.
So it came to a point that we said, you know what? We might as well have a non-for-profit. So this is how we developed the RNCG Angel Foundation. The logo for the RN Cancer Guides somewhat looks like an angel. And so what we did is we added a halo, and that's how we called it the foundation.
There you go.
So we have various services with the foundation. Not only does it provide oncology navigation, but it also provides transportation services mm-hmm. for patients to get to their appointments. The other thing that it provides is legal services. We work with various attorneys in the Bay Area that actually help with estate planning, advanced directives, living wills, those type of things. Those are things that people don't think about but could cost them their whole estate.
Right.
Or, you know, they could be in the ICU at the last stage of their disease and they shouldn't be.
Right.
They should be home. In fact, I just went through that with my mother-in-law this weekend. And so we're having a huge party this week while she's home on hospice.
Oh, cool.
And last night was pizza and wine on her bed. So we had a great time. The other thing that we provide is educational services. So we have a wonderful board to talk about providing programs for screening. It's not just about dealing with cancer in the present moment, but how can we reduce that? And so we do things like HPV vaccination awareness, which we're having in February. And it has various components to it that kind of fills in the gaps.
Well, and speaking of gaps, one of the things that we talked about at lunch was it must be an overwhelming thing to get a diagnosis of cancer. It must just completely blow you out of the water. And I can't imagine how you would even begin to navigate that. And that's really what you guys are for.
Correct. And the fact that we're specialized in oncology. So mm-hmm. we talk the lingo. You know, one of the things that we had discussed is you would have an attorney take you through your case, whether it's guarding your property or your livelihood or your life, in a system you don't understand.
Right.
Why would you not have somebody close to you that understands genetics, genomics, treatment therapies? Nurses cannot treat. We're not going to say what you should and should not do, but we educate you on the pros and cons of everything so you can make an informed decision. And I will tell you that, as we discussed, 80% of the patients we come across don't even truly understand what they have.
Right.
And it's almost like telling them they have cancer again, especially when they don't understand words like palliative or, even hospice. What are the benefits of hospice? You know, you can be in hospice for a year, and if you get better, they can kick you out. But they have wonderful services, and we're huge advocates of that. And right now, the average time that a cancer patient spends in hospice is 6.4 days.
Wow.
And in the VA, it's 3.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. And when you look at the treatments of patients, 52% of patients are getting treatment the last 15 to 30 days before they pass. That's awful.
We talked about this at lunch because I told you that some of the things that I've seen, especially online, I was telling you about a doctor that I had seen that did a post, and he was talking about receiving treatment for cancer, and that this is, what is it, all the different treatments, the radiation and the chemo. He was saying in this video that doctors make a ton of money off of this and that there's really no reason to cure cancer. And I asked you about this. Mm-hmm. Is this true? I mean, are these people just exercising their opinion? Or are there actually some treatments? And you gave a great answer. It depends on the cancer.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It depends on the cancer. It depends on the patient. And that's what makes cancer so unique. It's like their own independent fingerprint.
Right.
I mean, everybody's different. And right now in cancer treatments, that's what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
I was recently last week up in Washington, D.C., meeting with various people from the Moonshot Task Force. And got to meet President Biden, Vice cool. President Biden, which was kind of neat, and it was neat. Mm-hmm. And
wasn't it his son? Didn't he lose him to cancer?
He did. He lost him to a glioblastoma, and which is my background is neuro-oncology. And the whole reason I started RN Cancer Guides was because my brother-in-law came down with a glioblastoma, the same tumor. Mm-hmm. And I had to navigate the aspects of all his care. I mean, even telling my sister-in-law, listen, you have to buy a house that has one floor, wide right. doorways, not a lot of carpet, because I anticipated how things are going to look at the end.
Right.
And so they're working on a lot of things nationally. This whole moonshot is about sharing information. Right now, cancer patients, their treatments are based off 3% of the oncology patients in clinical trials.
What do you mean by that?
3%. So the treatments that they're receiving that have evidence base behind them are right. based on 3% of these
no.
patient population.
Wow.
And that patient population was selected. You get selected when you're in clinical trial. Mm-hmm. You know, whether there's certain eligibility criteria. There are things that exclude you. For a long time, patients that weren't even over the age of 70 qualified. So when you're looking at, we're giving these patients treatments that you know, they're over the age of 70. Mm-hmm. They have all the different comorbidities like heart disease, diabetes, their kidneys might not function as well, and they're going to take quite a hit. So then you have to sit there and weigh the options and let them know, are these treatments going to end their life a lot quicker
right.
than the cancer? And in most cases, there are certain cancers, leukemias, lymphomas, even melanoma, stage 4 diseases that we are able to actually cure, that we
really?
Were never able to cure before.
And is that because of all the research that's been
that's
done?
All the research.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a lot of people ask that same question. Where is the money when we talk about October coming up, Breast Cancer Awareness Month,
sure.
for example? You know, where does all this money go? And again, we have varying answers to that question depending upon who you talk to. And I think that it's something that people really wonder about.
Yeah.
Where is that money that I'm giving or that I'm walking for really go?
Right. Well, you know, I can, if you really want to know, they can always look at their 990, which will tell
right.
them. I mean, that goes for any non-for-profit, even non-for-profit hospitals. If you really want to know mm-hmm. how they're doing, you know, pull their 990. But what we're trying to do, I know in Washington with the 21st Century Cures Act, is that we are trying to make sure everybody shares data now. The pharmaceutical companies will share data. Right now, if you get a grant from the United States in this space program, you have to share that information of what you find. It's not really that way when it comes to cancer research. Everybody kind of hoards it.
Mm-hmm.
And we need it in real time, and we need it now to expedite this. And so that's what all that's about. When it comes to other non-for-profits raising money, and I can only speak, obviously, to mine, I can tell you that navigation started out mostly in breast navigation.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about breast cancer coming up. You'll see more navigators, and that's a really, you know.
And is that because it's women that are involved in that mostly, and that women have the tendency to maybe reach out a little farther and be more than caregivers?
I think what that came out of was actually there's a Dr. Harold Freeman who was a physician, an oncologist in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, and kept seeing, and this is kind of like the father of nurse navigation, so to speak, and this many years ago, and he kept seeing that he was getting African-American women in late-stage breast cancer, what was going on, so developed programs for outreach
mm-hmm.
to get them in earlier, and started to say, you know, the more education we do, the more screening that we do, we're able to catch these a lot sooner.
Right.
And navigation seems to be, and it's going to be the wave of the future in a sense where, you know, somebody has to pull all these pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do. I mean, we're very fortunate that we're able to work outside of all the facilities and we're not beholden to just one or any insurance company. But somebody's got to be talking to the primary care. Somebody's
right.
got to be talking to the surgeon. Somebody's got to be talking to the radiation oncologist. Somebody's got to talk to the medical oncologist. Somebody has to pull all of this together so there's some continuity of care
mm-hmm.
and not wasting money. And so what happened in the breast world with navigation, Susan G. Komen kicked in and set at one point in 2012, 79% of navigators inside hospitals were breast. And that was because of the funding from Susan G. Komen.
Oh, I see.
So then the American College of Surgeons came down and said, if you want to be certified as a facility, you need to have navigation and survivorship in place. But it never said how, and it didn't say that it needed to be a nurse.
Oh.
So it's done differently all over.
Right.
And it depends on how much buy-in the facility is actually going to provide. And the thing is, these nurses are really having to to tell administration and justify their positions. And like I said, everybody does it different. I also serve on the Oncology Nursing Society Leadership Board for Navigation for the United States. There's 12 of us. Mm-hmm. And everybody is doing it different. So
really?
That's the big buzz right now, is how do we coordinate this care?
Right.
And that's why you saw more in breast. That's why people are familiar with navigators within breast.
I see. Anybody could hire you, quote unquote, no matter what kind of cancer diagnosis they would get?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So you're not just doing it at one facility or for a certain kind of cancer. It's across the board.
It's across the board. And not only that, we actually are going to be growing nationally.
Oh, are you really?
Yes.
Awesome. So you serve any county, whether that be Sarasota, Manatee, Citrus, Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco, the whole listening area.
All of them.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I would imagine having somebody, especially a nurse, because, and I'm not just saying this because I was in nursing school or because you're a nurse, but really nurses are the ones that put that care into effect. I mean, they're the ones that are with the patients. And I would think, knowing the things that nurses know, I mean, this is not an easy degree to get. I mean, nurses are smart people, that all of the things that you see, whether it's from school and then in your practice, being able to pull that all together for somebody has got to be a huge weight off of their shoulders. I just cannot imagine trying to go through that navigation by yourself when you've just found out that you have cancer.
Correct.
Impossible.
Correct. And, you know, for that very reason, nurses actually have been the most trusted profession for the past, since 2000 in the Gallup polls. That was one of the reasons we had such an incredible voice up in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Was that, you know, we are very well respected. The only time I think we were passed up was the firefighters after 9/11. That was for 1 year.
Yeah.
I won't tell you at the end of the list, there's lobbyists and Congress. So they are at the very end.
And the presidential candidates.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they made the list at all, actually.
Right.
That's a whole nother day and a whole nother subject.
Exactly.
But no, I think that I can't imagine anybody not going through something like this. Because like you said, cancer is a big business.
Right.
So there's a couple barriers. You know, first, it's finding out you have cancer.
Right.
And usually the day you find out cancer, everybody's throwing all the treatment options at you. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to other nurses and I said, please do not do that to them. Mm-hmm. Let them go home and just kind of take it all in that they actually have cancer. Not
right.
every cancer diagnosis is a death sentence. You know, right. 65% are living with treatments.
Right.
And, you know, the thing is, we're going to see more people surviving with cancer. And so I think you have to take that time to take it in. And then you go back and you educate the patient on what their treatment options are.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also going against the business of cancer.
That's the thing I think
that worries
me. Which
is a really big business.
Yeah, it is a big business. That's what I was started out saying,
sure.
that there's a lot of money to be made off of people who have cancer.
There is.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, when you're talking about the first line of treatment, and I think the best thing is, you know, ask your oncologist, how far would you go with this treatment?
Right.
I think we would tell you that we would try the first line, maybe the second line, but that would be it. I think as health professionals, we would not be doing these third, fourth line therapies. And a lot of these newer drugs that are coming out, there's immunotherapies, there are side effects to these things.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, some of these drugs that are coming out did not do quality of life studies.
Yeah.
So you have to decide, you know, like I said, my mother-in-law is a prime example. She has small cell lung cancer. And so the chemotherapy that she had done one round was going to actually work for her cancer for a short amount of time. Because what it does is it does a really good job up front, but it will come back with a vengeance. And there's nothing really you can do besides radiation. And so she knew that time was limited. And the second day that I brought her home and she finished her chemo, she said she was nauseous. And I looked down and I said, tell me that's ginger ale. And it was a highball. So I'm like, you can't drink alcohol while undergoing chemo. But she's from the years of the socialite where everybody had a highball at night. And so I'm like, that won't work. And then she really wiped her out the rest of the weekend. And she said, if this is what it's going to be,
right.
I don't want to do this, because she is very active.
Right.
And so at that point, we said, okay, we'll put you in hospice, and which was last Monday. And, you know, with chemotherapies, you can get through the side effect portion, but then you have to get through your nadir. A nadir is when all your counts will drop. We do that on purpose when we're given systemic chemotherapy. Your hemoglobin will drop, your platelets will drop, and your white blood cell count will drop. And it's taking those precautions. And unfortunately, last Friday, she developed where her white blood cells totally were wiped out and got an infection. Mm. And so the decision, she was in the hospital for, you know, one day in the ICU. And we brought her home and we just said, you know what? She would be really upset if she missed her own funeral. So I said, let's just have a huge party for Babs all week. And so we brought her home and that's, like I said, that's the plan. We have been partying it up. People are jumping in the pool. It's giving someone options. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that really kind of gnaws at me at time is people will not want to tell their loved one that they have cancer.
I was going to ask you this.
Or, you know, even, you know, it's not brought up how much time they have left because they don't want to take away their hope.
But there isn't any at that point, is there?
Well, you know, there's always hope. I mean, it depends what your belief system is.
Okay.
And then there's the reality.
Okay.
And the thing is, I think by not telling a cancer patient what's going on, that we, you know, we say, well, we're giving them hope. No, we're lying.
Right. That's what we're
doing. And it's an omission. And it's basically saying, well, we're going to buffer you so that, you know, you don't know what's coming. But then again, it takes away your ability to prepare.
Right.
And everybody has their own right to talk to the persons that they want to talk to finish up what they want to finish up. And we as providers and or even family members do not have that right to take that away from a patient.
I agree with you. We talked about this at lunch because this is something that I had been talking to Nick, who does the morning show on the Eagle, and a couple other people that are of my age, what we would do if we found out that we had a terminal disease. And would we go to the first even, you know, would we decide that we want to try to do it with diet? How, you know, what would we do? And then you came into my life and I said, oh, well, you're the perfect person to ask. Is there just a major amount of confusion around there? There's no way that we could possibly know all the things that are out there, especially in the emotional state that you'd be in when you get that diagnosis.
Oh, yeah. And we're not even talking about the financial side.
Right.
You know, most bankruptcies, personal bankruptcies, are due to medical reasons. Doesn't even address that. So, yeah, it comes down to what is important to the patient. That's what being truly patient-centered is. And like we had talked about, you know, at lunch, you will never find a doctor's note or a nurse's note that says the patient's goal is what? It's our goal for the patient. It's not the patient's goal.
Right.
And I remember we met with a family who, you know, telling them what their options were and, you know, what the doctor said and how it was all spelled out and going over the pathology and getting everybody on the same page. And the patient who was older and had stage 4 disease, but he had a lot of other things wrong with him, mm-hmm. said to me, well, this really isn't a medical goal, but my wife has dementia. I want to take care of her as long as I can. And I said, but that is your goal. Mm-hmm. I mean, since when did we get away from that?
Right.
And I said, unfortunately, if you take these treatments, they're going to wipe you out so much that you won't be able to do that. Right. And that's what was important. It was making sure that his wife was going to be okay, mm-hmm. making sure that he had time with her and to take care of her.
Right.
And that's what we need to do. We also need to make sure that we're getting treatments around what you do for a job. You know, a lot of people don't ask when they go into an oncologist's office, listen, I work with my hands. You don't want a job that's going to give you peripheral or chemo that's going to give you peripheral neuropathy that you can't work for the rest of your life.
Right.
You know, so you really have to tailor it. With
so
what
many
the
things
say.
To think about. That's just it. When I heard about this, I thought this is the perfect idea because really there's just nobody else that you could go to. And in fact, I used the example with you that I'd gotten fired from a job. This is about 4 years ago. And that what you go through to get unemployment, you might as well not even apply for it. But I always said that I need to start a business or a website or something to tell people what pitfalls they're going to hit as they go through this process, because most people like me have been gainfully employed their whole lives and would have no idea how to navigate that system. And this is exactly what you do in mm-hmm. a much more important way.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, the question we get a lot, which I kind of chuckle at, is how do the doctors receive you?
I was going to ask you that too. Does it make them mad?
You know what? The good ones, it doesn't.
I would think.
Here's my thought on that is, you know, obviously what we do as a company, we have an employee cancer assistance program. And so we are responsible for a lot of lives. So we're a referral base, mm-hmm. first off. The other thing is, I don't know any doctor that wouldn't love to have their own oncology nurse on the outside watching their patients to make sure that they don't end up in the ER
right.
or in the ICU or we're catching things early, or we're educating, or they're more compliant with their treatment regimen because we're on top of it.
Right.
So it really is a win-win. And, you know, doctors are on overload. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, how we see things progressing, there's going to be a 45% increase in cancer patients between now and 2030 due to baby boomers.
Okay.
Obesity, everything that we're exposed to. So people are going to start seeing more cancer. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean all these people are going to pass. It just, that's the incident that they're predicting through the World Health Organization. We have 20% of our oncologists getting ready to retire.
Oh boy.
There are more doctors that really aren't going into oncology because reimbursement rates are real low. So your time with your oncologist is going to be like 7 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
So who's going to fill in the gaps of all of that?
Right.
And that's why it's important what we do. And we work closely as a team. It takes a team. You know, it takes the doctor to come up with a treatment plan. Mm-hmm. We can't do without him.
Right.
Or her. And the same thing with us. I mean, we help, you know, eliminate all those extra phone calls for the nurse that's working in the clinic.
That's true, too.
It's really a win-win. And believe it or not, staying on top of things, we save a lot of money.
I'll bet.
A lot of money.
Yeah. And it doesn't cost the people anything to use you, does it?
Not through the foundation on a sliding scale. When it comes to the company, that's a different story.
Right. So if somebody wants to get in touch with you and needs your help, how do they do it?
Then call 1-844-RN-GUIDE.
Okay. Do you have a website as well?
We do. The foundation is www.rncgangelfoundation.org. And then, of course, our company, which is www.rncgcancerguides.com. Okay.
We'll repeat those, I promise. That's what everybody wants to know. So my next question, again, is about the doctors. Is it an unfair thing to say that doctors don't want to cure cancer? You say the reason that doctors aren't going into it is because they're not being reimbursed. That is the thing that I'm hearing so much about cancer, is that it's a big moneymaker for doctors and that they really don't want there to be a cure. Is that just a conspiracy?
I don't believe that at all.
I
don't believe that at all, because the doctors that we go into and the people I meet and the nurses that I'm around, we would love nothing more than to not have to deal with this tragic disease. And they work really, really hard. And these doctors put their heart and soul into what they do. This is not an easy profession.
No, I can't.
You know,
imagine.
One of the things that we get asked as nurses, oncology nurses, is how do you do this day in and day out?
Right.
But it's, if you can get somebody through the hardest time of their life as smooth as possible, that's what we're here for. And that's just kind of our belief.
Are you finding sometimes when it comes to talking to the patient, we're talking earlier about giving them all the information, do some of their families not want you to tell them that there are alternatives to not, for example, taking medications or certain protocols? Do you find that a lot, that some families want something different than the patient does?
I would say they don't have a problem with us talking about it, but family members do, you know, they go to the web, they start searching these different treatments that are kind of out there. Everything that we present to the patient has to have evidence behind it. And, you know, there are certain things that we advocate more than others. You know, one of the things that we discuss is the nutrition piece.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah. And, you know, people push Boost and Ensure. There's never been a clinical trial with Boost and Ensure.
Yeah,
it's got lots of sugar in it.
I was just going to say, the only thing that I did hear about those two products is that it's full of sugar.
It's full of sugar.
Yeah.
It's you know, so there's other companies. Cellmark makes a product called CellAssure, which is a phenomenal product. It was 29 grams of protein and zero sugar. And it is actually designed and has gone under evidence based for cachexia, which is, you know, malnutrition or weight loss in cancer patients.
Okay.
Because you can get through cancer, but it's the side effects of everything that it causes you might not get through. So, you know, there's talking to patients about that. There's been a lot of evidence about vitamin C infusions. You know, I have seen it firsthand. So there's a lot of things that can help. You have to be able to mix the two. You have to tell people that are totally on one spectrum where they want to be holistic.
And it's not all nutrition.
Right. And you have to sit there and say, you know, you have to embrace a little bit of Western. But on the same side, you know, Western medicine has to embrace Eastern medicine and holistic. And I mean, everything comes from a plant, except if we make it synthetically. Mm-hmm. So it derives there somewhere. So I want people to be careful of what they take. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that while you're taking chemotherapy that actually can block the metabolism of and compete for the chemotherapy. So now you're not doing yourself any good.
And you would look this up, or I would look this up on the web and think this was the perfect answer. And had I not talked to you, I would go ahead and use it. And you're telling me that it would keep the other medicine from working. This is exactly what people need from somebody like you.
Yeah.
You are the only one who would know that because you've been through this before.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, how do you handle the medicine? You know, oral chemotherapies are just as toxic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have to tell, make sure that they don't have the pregnant daughter-in-law holding a pill in her hand. Ooh. I mean, you don't flush it down the toilet. You have to take it every single day. Mm-hmm. And when you break for that, and it's easy because it's at home. So if you're not feeling well, you're going to be like, well, how is it going to hurt if I just miss one day?
Right.
You know, these aren't antibiotics. You've just given your cancer a bit of an opportunity to progress.
Right.
So there has to be this huge education component, and you have to meet people where they are. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to talk about the meds, even getting the medication bottle in their language. You'd be surprised.
It seems so simple, doesn't it?
You would be surprised. I mean, did they get the rest of the stuff that comes with it? The anti-nausea medicine? I mean, if you do get some medicine at home, you know, chemo, and you don't have the anti-nausea, then it's rough. You don't want to go through it again.
Right.
So it's really important to have these discussions and really do a teaching session, which is what we do. We sit down and answer all that. And if they come up to us with something that somebody found, we'll research it.
You're not going to go, oh, poo-poo.
No, it's not for us to say. It's not our lives.
I love that attitude. So, yeah, I love your attitude with this. I've just got to say congratulations to you for coming up with this, although it seems like as caring a person as you are, and I know that the people that are in the nursing profession really do care. I mean, it's kind of why they're not doctors for the most part, isn't it? I'm not saying there aren't caring doctors. I'm not trying to say that, but really.
Yeah, we depend on those doctors. They're on my board, so yeah.
But you're the one giving the care, and you're the one that has seen how those different things interact. I think it's an awesome thing, and I promised again that we were going to give all those informational numbers, so let's do that.
The number for the RN Cancer Guides and the foundation is 1-844-RN-GUIDE. The website for the foundation is www.rncgangelfoundation.org. For the company, it's www.rncancerguides.com.
One more thing I want to ask you about, and you were talking about this transportation, and I thought I had heard something about the Angel Foundation. You provide rides. Aren't people able to come and give rides as volunteers? Like if you've got some extra time on your hands, don't you have volunteers that do that?
We would love to have volunteers do that. There's actually a program through the American Cancer Society called Road to Recovery.
Maybe that was what I was thinking
that asks for people to volunteer. We need more people to give rides.
Okay.
Because if they don't go, they miss their treatments.
Right.
And, you know, it's very important. But, you know, everything that we do depends on the funding that we receive, hence our big event coming up.
Right. Hence, yes.
And which is really important. Mm-hmm. And without the funding, we can't do any of this. But the one thing I do want to say is not only does our foundation kind of fill in those gaps, and we say it's always great to give to research, but our patients don't have 5-10 years.
Right.
They need help now. Right. And one of the other things that we do is we connect with the other not-for-profits.
Great.
In the community. So it's, you know, we have a family right now that reached out last year to find a family that was going through breast cancer to help them for Christmas.
Oh, that's great.
And so we get these wonderful people reaching out to us because we have the patients. How do they connect with them?
Exactly.
And also, you know, like I said, there's other groups that we work with, Women with Purpose and different various groups, which takes a village. So
yes, it
does.
And speaking of getting the village together, you've got a great promotion that's happening in October. Let's talk about this. By the way, I already got a costume. I'll tell you about it in a minute. It's for Halloween, but it's actually on
October 14th. It's a Friday, in just a couple weeks at the Don Cesar in the Grand Ballroom.
That's going to be so much fun. A costume party. Now, I had some friends who decided we were going to go as the Three Little Pigs. And then the one girl was like, I don't want to dress like a pig.
It's like when we used to fight over who would be Charlie's Angels. Who would be the pretty one?
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to be Sabrina.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's the same thing. But actually, this year's event, every October, we have an event called Scaring Off Cancer. It's to have a lot of fun, kind of having an adult, nice adult Halloween party / costume party. And it was also came out of the fact that I don't run. So I thought, well, we'll combine the two. too. We have this year's event. It has a fairy tale theme. It's a fairy tale ball. It is at the Don Cesar in the Grand Ballroom, October 14th. You can get tickets through Facebook.
Okay.
And just look up the event on Facebook.
At Angel Foundation?
At the Angel Foundation, mm-hmm. or you can go on our website for the foundation and find it. We're just so grateful to the community for helping out, and it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a great night.
It is going to be
fun. In fact, I'm going as a certain evil character, which my son is getting married the week before, so I thought I'd wear it to his wedding, too.
I was just going to say, are you going to wear the same dress?
I could be the mother-in-law and dress that way.
I think that'll be perfect. So those are great ways to get in touch with you. This is going to be a great time. I'm going to be there, so we will see you there, and I will be the unicorn, and there's a whole joke about that I can't tell on the air, but it'll be kind of funny. Susan Shearer has been our guest this morning. You've come up with just a perfect way to really to add to the experience of going through cancer in a positive way for people.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime.